Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much, Malcolm. And thank you for inviting me to come to ACMA this morning. I have a bit of a reputation as a bomb thrower, so let's get right to work. Cast your mind back to the good old days, the ancient times of maybe just 5 years ago, when it was very easy to understand Australian audiences. When Australian audiences, as far as mass media were concerned, were collected around three free-to-air commercial broadcasters and two free-to-air national broadcasters. And that was it. That was the whole ballgame. Those were mass audiences, audiences that measured in millions, all experiencing the same things at the same time. And the thing that we don't often say, even though we understand that it happens, is when you gather mass audiences around mass experiences, what you produce is a mass culture and a mass expectation and a mass understanding of the way things work because everyone's experiencing the same things at the same time. And this was, of course, the triumph of industrialization. It was where industrialization meant the information age. So you had massive broadcasters reaching mass audiences. And just at the moment of its greatest extent, when it looked like the future was completely boundless, it disintegrated. And what happened? Well, something that had been building for a few years finally came ashore. Now, you can remember 10 years ago, the World Wide Web was being evangelized by a lot of people, myself included, as the ultimate democratic medium, that it was going to have a deployment that would change everything that had come before it. And, well, what did we end up with? Well, we ended up with what looked like, for the first 5 years of the World Wide Web, a complete recapitulation of the 100 or 500 years of publishing that had preceded it, where the incumbent publishers and the incumbent broadcasters simply colonized the space of the Internet. So it looked exactly like it did before. And so as far as these companies are concerned, they simply extended their franchises. And for the broadcasters, nothing changed at all. But underneath it, underneath all of this, there was actually an enormous amount of change taking place. But it was a change that actually didn't happen instantaneously. And it was a change that was precipitated by the fact that we got 20 million Australians and basically nearly a billion other people all around the world and connected them together in a network. What we've started to understand now, and we're really only at the beginning of understanding it because we've never seen it before, is that when you collect people into a network, they start to change the way they behave. They self-organize. They collect in groups. They work on strategies. They trade information. And the more they trade information, the more they learn about trading information, and the better they get at trading information. And soon, they're not just trading information. They're trading information about how to trade information. That's where things get really interesting. Because what happens is that for the first 5 years of the web, 1996 to 2001, and now the second 5 years of the web, 2001 to 2006, and in that 5 years, all of us working online have completely rewritten the rules about how all information gets distributed. So in the next 5 years, 2006 to 2011, these rules are going to completely change the world. Because where we are now, there's no center. There's no central point for information distribution anywhere on the Internet. Instead of an audience which is receiving a really restricted set of programming through a fundamentally restricted number of channels, we have silently and permanently adopted another approach. And each of us are already doing it. Let me give you a good example. You wake up in the morning. I wake up in the morning. I do my yoga. I eat my breakfast. I sit down and I check my email. Most of you probably check your email when you walk into the office in the morning if you don't do it before you leave for the office. And, of course, there'll be some work emails there. And there might be some emails from family about various things or sort of commitments. And then there's going to be a stack of emails from your friends. And that stack of emails from your friends has more and more come to consist of links to things, links to media. Might be YouTube. Might be a link to a web page. Might be a link to Flash animation. You never really know what it is. But what we're finding now is that this has become the broadcast system, because what's happening is that each of us, as we're working on the internet, are finding things. We find things and immediately think, oh, this is interesting. Wait, who else will find this interesting? And we filter that. And then the next thing we do is we forward it on to these people. So each of us have become, in a sense, our own broadcasters, our own transmitters. So I call that the three F's. We find, we filter, and we forward. And this has become the archetype for how all of us are working inside media, inside the 21st century. Each of us are the centers of these universes. So now, instead of a fixed number of sources of information, we have countless millions. And that number is continuing to grow exponentially. So we create, we edit, we mash up, and we distribute. And all of this is happening all of the time. This has become completely bog standard. It's become bog standard that we don't really even notice that we're doing it. And yet we are doing it, and it's something we didn't do 5 years ago. Think about that. We are doing it, and it's something we didn't do 5 years ago. Think about that. You actually give the audience the control of distribution. The audience takes control away from any sort of incumbent media distributor and actually handles the distribution task themselves. These hyper-distribution features are probably now starting to have enormous political meta effects on culture. It is probable when the histories are written about the congressional elections in the United States that took place 2 weeks ago, it's going to be conclusively shown that control of the U.S. Senate changed hands because of these hyper-distribution networks. Because the netroots, which are left-leaning websites, or communities of people who have been empowered by the net to actually use political activity to donate money to campaigns, to follow politicians around with cameras and post every one of their gaffes to YouTube so that a million people know something that went wrong 5 minutes after it happened. That all of this has effectively created a citizenry that is completely energized and has created its own mass medium. But it's not created one mass media. It's created millions and millions of them. And when you've done that, you've effectively said there's no more mass media. Now, we may not understand that yet. We still look out, we see the television stations, we see the newspapers, we say they're still very strong, they're still very powerful. But at a functional level, if you can actually affect the political balance in an election, if you can get a media message out that the regular incumbent media has no interest in broadcasting and still get it out just as effectively, you've created your own mass medium. And so, from having one mass media into a million mass media, we've disintegrated from a mass culture into an entire series of micropolities. And this is the reason why this panel is so important. Because it is now possible for each of us in our own little island universes, with our millions and millions of choices of media to pick from, to pick exactly those things which conform to our beliefs and to continue to feed ourselves those beliefs repeatedly, which basically means that in the long run you're going to end up with a cult of one, where all we're doing is satisfying our own intense beliefs by continuing to feed ourselves with things that reinforce those beliefs. So each of us, if we're not careful, are going to be living inside of a cult we've made. If we're allowed to, if we're going to continue to have any common life as a culture inside of the Commonwealth, we have to learn for ourselves, because we don't know how to do it, and we have to teach to our children, who obviously don't yet have any idea how to do it, how to achieve some form of media literacy that isn't just about dealing with a few sources and balancing between them, but is dealing with an infinity of points of view and learning how to integrate those into some sort of cultural identity. Now, people will talk about objectivity. I've been doing a lot of research basically looking at the 17th century, which was the birth of the modern mass media, the birth of newspapers, around the idea of where journalistic objectivity came from. And I'm going to offend any journalists in the room, but as near as I can tell, the concept of journalistic objectivity was promoted as a point of view that helped sell more newspapers. I don't actually buy objectivity as a concept. What I do buy as a core concept in media literacy and something that has to become part of our cultural worldview is this idea of balance. that if we're going to talk about the fact that you are what you eat, if you eat a lot of junk food, you're going to get sick and die from heart disease because you did that. We have to understand that you are also the information that you absorb, that everything that you absorb affects you, affects your thinking. And so we need to have a well-rounded media diet. But that's the key element, I think, in a 21st century media literacy, is understanding how to make that diet, understanding how to teach others how to develop that diet. So we have the problem, and we have a solution. But do we have the will, personally, culturally, and politically, to make it happen? Thank you.